Good evening, everyone. It's 7 o'clock, it's Wednesday night, and we're in the midst of Work of Groups, a volume in the Secret Talk series by E.J. Gold. And we've made ourselves, we've got to the week 13 now, Ivan, and we're on chapter 30.
Whoa.
So.
Week 13.
13, that's right. And some people hold that in mystery. I don't. Okay. So, so each one of the things that we've been doing is notating down the elements that we might see, Ivan, as we work in this group format. What are some elements that are group elements? Okay. So, and this is what, do you want to read that? This is what Marvette came up with last week.
Yeah, if I so can these, read it. Let's see.
These two pages, or I can read it.
These two pages?
Yeah.
Okay, Wednesday, June 7th, 17, Work of Groups, week number 12. Operations of a group. One, the engagement with this group is a daily, not just a weekly activity, meaning the awareness, the attention, and the commitment is a daily activity. Two, there's a form of monasticism that occurs when you're following the principles of a school. Three, members of a group sharing an intended upcoming activity with the group can be tapped into from the space of the group assembly, i.e. exercise. 20 people can keep themselves at least alert, if not exactly awake. That was from the talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Four, a group must work to become a school. A group must work to become a school. Five, notice how simple it was for people to say what they were going to be doing. Last time it wasn't easy, this time it just flowed. Oh yeah, here, continued. Second part, functions of a group. One, a group with the intent and focus on the teachings presented may be an element of a school. Notation, it's not the big 24, it's a big 2x4. It's worth a t-shirt.
Good. Thank you, Ivan. You can, we're going to give that to Margaret. We're going to leave it there for the moment. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to continue now. We're going to leap into chapter 30, Ivan, and I think that's got a lot of meat to it. Let's go ahead and read the first few paragraphs and just see where we go.
All right.
Okay?
You want me to start?
Sure, go ahead.
Chapter 30, the question of nature. To live in past or future is to live among the organic dead. Ordinary dead men can have only imaginary powers. Now I have a question for you. Someone supposedly living in future, is he really living in future? No, said M. He is really living in the past. G sat forward and with a shrewd glint in his eye said, why you say this? M said thoughtfully, he has no real data for the future, I think, so he must be expecting his future on the basis of his past, real and imaginary.
So when we looked at that, and it really struck me, I really like M's answer to you know, EJ's query of him saying, well, somebody doesn't know what the future is, so whatever they're constructing, if then mentally they're in the future, they're rearranging the past in a certain way, right? How could they possibly know what the future is?
Yeah, right. They're just projecting or fantasizing based on the past.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's imaginary.
Often that can just be a series of wishes and hopes and whatnot. When I read that, I had a different thought on it, though, Ivan.
Yeah.
And my thought was is that what if we're getting messages, in a sense, from the future? In a sense, we're getting the message from the future, and it's, in a sense, telling us what to do, where to go, how to proceed. In our own unique nature, our own unique individuality, don't we have a sense of the kind of work we're going to do? Some people may start off, like some people here, Dan, start off with doing jobs of great computer technology and skill set, and then realize that's not what he should be doing. And you change that, you follow a different path, right? Where did that come from? I mean, what is that? And maybe someone was working in an office in insurance or something and suddenly had to totally change their life. Or people don't take certain jobs and maybe they'll say something like, well, I don't like it. What is that? Where is that coming from? And I guess I'm posing the question, since we're talking about the future, can we have objective sensations about the future or of the future?
David, I'd like to comment, if I might.
Good. Help us out here, Harry.
Well, I don't know how much help it will be, but I do think we can have a sensation, a unique sensory signature for something from the future, which would vary from something we're projecting from our past. We have to finely tune that.
Can you say more about that?
Well, it's just a finely tuned sensing of the difference between them. There would be two different sensory signatures that we would notice if we have learned to pay attention.
So we have a sensation that might be unique in a certain way, that might have a little bit of a signature of this is the future.
Yeah, for everybody's different criteria for that, I would say yes, probably.
Yeah. I guess I think, Ivan, that sometimes there's like the unfurled path that we each are on, like, I need to do this type thing. This is my next effort. I should be doing this. And do we change our life in a certain way to do that? And where does that come from? You know, can there be an objective sensation of the future? Not an easy one. You got any help for us over there, Dan?
No. I think I'm a little stopped or whatever, stalled regarding what you're talking about, because I think because it wasn't a question that came to mind when I read this passage.
Go ahead, then.
You know, because, let's see. G is opening this talk saying, to live in past or future is to live among the organic dead. Ordinary dead men can have only imaginary powers. You know, it seems to me, anyway, he seems to be opening a subject here that has to do with more with sensing, perhaps, with being in the present. You know, I think that what he's saying is that people who are living in their heads, you know, who are living in imaginary, you know, patterns or ideas or whatever, understandings or whatever that are coming from all of your personal history, your, you know, your history of the historical personality, it's a quote, a term that Silverdale would probably be using, you know, that this is the organic dead. And then the future, to be saying, you know, instead of being present in this moment, to be thinking, well, I'm going to accomplish this tomorrow, and I'm going to accomplish this great thing next week, and here's what I'm going to do with the next 5 years of my life, and so on, is part of mechanical life. That's what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I got out of what he was saying here. Someone supposedly living in future, is he, then he says, now I have a question for you. Someone supposedly living in future, is he really living in future? And, you know, I'm not even sure where to go with that.
Well, M answers saying probably not.
He says he's really living in the past because he's expecting his future on the basis of his past, real and imaginary. Anyway,
David, I would like to add that this future is not necessarily something very pleasant.
Right.
It may be a revelation of the kind of work you need to do, and in my own personal case, it was not very pleasant. But I know.
So you got a hint of something that said to you, this is what the future should be or where you should go. Is that what you're implying?
Precisely, because I thought, well, this is probably, I tried to identify what I can offer to the group. Do I have anything worthwhile for the future for the group? And yes, I've been called upon to do several things that I've done, and I'm willing to do that and continue it. But I thought, well, in order to do this fully, you have to deal with your own personal issues if you're to be a conduit for a higher force. And and since I was thinking that in the group, I suddenly got a whole big dose of it myself that I did not expect to happen. So I had to do some of the stuff that I was going to be preaching about. And it's not very pleasant.
Okay, so
I
this
think
is
that's a real communication. That's a different
you know,
sensory
the same
signature.
Mood that I am about this possibility of the future. So let's see if we can expand on that. So one thing that was occurring is that you had this sensation, and you had it in the group space, right?
That is correct.
And in while you were doing that, you had a hint as to, can you get a little more specific about it? Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, we all have implicit memories from traumas. Most mental health problems are traumagenic. So you need to fix those things, or else you have a lot of crap gets in the way of what you want to do. It certainly hurts interpersonal relationships, and it certainly would hurt any kind of work effort. I couldn't imagine it being any other way. And so the little inner voice said, well, that's wonderful, Harry. So let's let you taste some of that you have overlooked yourself. And that's what's happened since then. The last couple of weeks have been very, very interesting.
So, Harry, if I understand what you're saying, are you talking about things that prevent me from being in the present?
Implicit memories always keep us
there.
Locked in, keep us from living in the present. They keep us in the past.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
They're hidden, so they're stored in the body, but the mind doesn't even know they're there. They're unconscious.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're talking about some of the nitty-gritty, the details of this, what do you call it, description, you know, this kind of diagnosis or something that M is giving here in this talk of where how we are living. How are we living? You know, how are we living every moment or every day?
But Harry is saying also that he had a distinct sensation that in order for him to go forward, he had to do that. He found this work principle that in a sense was theoretical.
Right.
And then, but when he set it in the space, it reflected back on him, that's the work you need to do. And I think that that's another opportunity we have in our work, is that if we speak an effort that we're supposed to make, sometimes it'll come back on us and demand action, in a sense. Heal thyself.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Heal thyself, physician, and wipe the egg from your face.
Yeah. So we're very fortunate to be able to speak these things in a group. Sometimes the purpose of speaking them in a group is simply self-revelatory. Okay? It's the work I have to do, Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not axiomatic that it flows from the concept of the future that M and EJ are talking about in that passage,
mm-hmm.
but it just keyed in an idea for me that the future, in a sense, is told to me, and sometimes by the efforts I start to make, and the new future, quite a hairy, interestingly enough, the new future is hidden by the buffers that I have and mm-hmm. I keep in place. What I should be doing is hidden because I hold on to the buffers that make my life more and more and more comfortable.
Nicely said, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, because I was actually, Harry, I was thinking in relation to the way that you were expressing this too. It occurred to me that I'm not actually feeling my pain, and I'm not actually feeling my joy or my pleasure either, if I'm either in the past or the future. In other words, those things are actually protecting me from my own current sensations, you know, from my actual sensing of the moment.
Yeah. And the work.
I mean,
and the
being
work
in a pattern. Being in a pattern, being repeating a pattern, let's say from the past, or carrying out a plan that I have for the future. You know, generally speaking, I mean, this may not be 100% true for everybody, but you know, to me, those are descriptions of ways of moving through my everyday life, which are pretty devoid of sensing, devoid of presence, let's say, of having presence in the present. I'm just thinking that there is pain. I think that there is pain that is going to come with being present.
Well, you find out something about yourself you did not know, and if somebody tells you something about yourself that everybody sees but you don't, there's a particular sensation that accompanies that, oh, God, they're right.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And
I think all of us can relate to that.
We can all relate to that. And I think, gentlemen, I think it's also implicit, that is the possibility of creating a new future. Because all the futures I can imagine now, less so now in my life, but were just permutations of the past. And I'm saying, when you look at what Harry's saying and the possibility of doing real work, then the pathway to newness and wonder open up. It's true. They do.
Okay, well, that's a good one. I got to think about that one.
I guarantee it.
Okay.
I like the way you say it, David.
We have a comment coming here.
I'm in actual experience of that, okay? You have another phone there, too, I think.
Did you press?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I was going to comment on the possibilities of creating a new future.
Yeah.
Because I think that goes along with a perspective one can take in relation to one's avatar in the ashram, the virtual ashram, Tantric path. Because Vijay talked about that avatar. Like, we see that as a reality in the computer. Like, that's like a quantum reality. But if you go, okay, that avatar sees us as an avatar in the same way. It's kind of unreal.
Yeah.
And that he identified as being our future self that's slightly more evolved. And so if we, and some people have talked about very intuitive connections and how that has affected their lives, and also kind of unusual things that they've noticed, that their avatar has a will of its own.
Yeah.
And demonstrated that. So I think that there is, but you know, it's all about holding in those buffers and getting past that to allow the wonder and the new possibilities. I mean, that phraseology, I think, can be very helpful, you know, in opening that space up for one. So that you could say that again. As far as I'm concerned,
you could say that again. Well, you know, this is. I'm not sure, Marvin. Correct me if I'm not repeating back what you're saying, right? But I mean, are you saying that I can get help actually from my avatar in Second Life? In other words, you're saying that this my avatar can be something like a guide because it is a part of myself, or an advanced version of myself, or a slightly different version of myself. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. That is true. Yeah. You can get help, and I think people have, and putting part of your attention in the ashram with your avatar, because you're strengthening that link of connection, will affect your everyday life.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because that vibration, that elevated vibration, because the activities there, a lot of them relate to working in group and prayer.
I work with the practice. So you're saying, it's a practice for us, spending time with an avatar or as an avatar in the ashram is part of our practice. It could be our daily practice.
Right, and Yichay had said, you know, from the beginning, put your avatar in. You got to go to work, but put your avatar in. And that keeps you linked in to that space.
Yeah. But I'm glad to be hearing this because I, for one, have not been doing this.
Well, you could experiment with it.
But yeah, I mean, I sign out, like when I'm in Second Life, then I exit. So, you know,
yeah.
I haven't been. Of course, I don't leave my computer on 24/7 either.
But I think it's the idea. When you see your avatar, if your avatar becomes the holy avatar,
mm-hmm.
when you view it, you're viewing, in a sense, you're viewing a higher self of yourself, higher part of yourself. Then you must, in a sense, come up to meet it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm
sports and things like that, they always say you should be practicing with somebody better than you are.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Well, see, I'm very open to the information or the idea that I need help, and I think I'm very bad at asking for help. But this is sounding like a great idea to me, that here's a source of help. I have it like right on when I turn my computer on.
Right.
Go and open up the ashram in Second Life. And I could, you know, if this is going to be, even if it's a resonance, you know, if it's a matter of a vibration, let's say what Silverdale talks about is, in essence, a vibrational level, let's say, that's going on in the background, something that can be...
Have you ever been...
radiating me or communicating with me.
Have you ever been to one of the clear light readings in the ashram?
I think I have, yeah.
Have you been to that,
Marvette?
Oh,
Marvette has, yeah.
You have, right? You can't go to that with your ordinary self,
yeah.
Right? It's like if you can get there, you must be operating in your higher self. You have guys like Jim, you know, Rocky,
mm-hmm.
Nortiana running the thing. These
mm-hmm.
are two excellent individuals.
Yeah.
Right? Like an excellence of space that they create.
And every morning, very early, of course, for the East Coast, it's not so early. And there's two East Coast people that run a reading circle. For us, it's early. Yeah, yeah. And for them, it's, you know, I mean, people get up to go to work at that time.
In the morning.
Yeah. And that's quite a dough to start with. And it's like such the momentum that the practice has built up. The space
that's the point.
Is very vibrant. And the beings that are receiving that every day, and they, you know, that it's really, that you, do you know all the people that have been helped? I mean, Rocky, we continued a long time, and Rocky is not only back to living, he's back working, and he's a very creative artist now. But there's many people that, you know, the power of prayer is very powerful, and being a channel for that, it affects you.
Yeah, and I have to say, I just have to footnote here that EJ is talking a great deal about magical tools, about shamanism and magical tools right now in regard to Cafe Press,
mm-hmm.
you know, items that he's offering.
Things like that.
Yeah, and that he, yeah, he's speaking in terms of resonance, of increasing your resonance through
okay.
various artifacts and magical tools. I thought of something else. We did this topic, just the subject of the avatars in Second Life, we did in the Prosperity Poets, who get together once a week.
Mm-hmm.
We did one evening there where we took it as a subject. Everybody wrote poems about his or her avatar. And those were an interesting, very interesting set of poems, because this is what we were examining.
Go ahead.
This relationship.
We have some comments. Grocky says, and connecting with the avatar also, in a way, provides us with a different perspective of orientation. And Brisa 24 says, past and future are inventions of the mind to deal with present time. We can either learn to use both to grow and expand, or we can become victims of the inventions of our imagination.
Nicely put.
Very
nice. Nicely put. Just push on here.
I don't know where are we going to go from here.
Up.
Yeah, really. It just occurred to me that I was trying to think of what some unusual experiences that I've had. I think that I've been the direction of my future, that the changes have come about in my life from moments when there was an expansion of the present. You know, when there was basically some present moment that I was in got very...
posited something in that. Being
got,
of yours.
It got very, well, yeah, it got very expanded, very archetypal,
it,
or very
left
something.
Something.
Well, it's like maybe what EJ talks about as dimensional portals or something like that, you know, having some experience of different dimensionality. And then it's not that you're not traveling into your past or your future, but you're very much expanding your present.
But we're trying
an unusual
to,
experience.
We're trying to unleash the essential self more and more and more. And when you have extreme moments like that, Ivan, I think it's like suddenly another little quarter inch of the essential self got awakened and
yeah,
is now permanentized.
I think it has something to do with, you know, one of the reasons that this avatar is so useful or so significant is that I think that it has to do with the point of view, you know, there's a degree of detachment that we don't have, we don't cultivate it generally in mechanical life, let's say, or in everyday life and so on. But, you know, I mean, invoking presence is a way of cultivating the present, you know, of getting you know, walking through the mechanical life, but you're expanding moments. You're having present moments become more. I'm saying, yeah, becoming more real, becoming the reality. It's like, you know, the becoming the perspective or the point of view that you're.
I think you're reading ahead, Ivan.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
I think
I'm getting bogged down.
I'm going to just skip a couple of the first.
Yeah.
73.
Yeah.
Even though this data was already present in you, maybe never formulate for yourself until provoked. Ideas must be used continually if they are to survive. We have only so much room for active ideas. Those not in use fall under the law of amnesia. False man exists in two isolated parts. Such are the laws under which he operates, that the more he may wish with one part, the less he is able to do in another, even with continual, periodic struggle. One can know how it feels to have a soul before the soul is formed. A soul is a master which body and mind must obey, continually aware of self functioning, independent of mind and body. So this is part of what I think I was meaning about the unmanifested future. We can feel this soul awaiting its coming out party.
My question to you, David.
Yes.
Do you think that your involvement with a group has enhanced that ability to feel that?
Absolutely.
Can you speak more on that?
I can. And this, I think I've been trying to say this for a couple of weeks now, is that the group vibratory sensation sets a bar of presence into which I come into that, I must rise to that. There's my normal, whiny, complaining self, desperate for approval, I leave at the door because it can't fit into this room. It's not able to express itself. So it's cleansed. But I've been doing this for a lot of Wednesdays now, and it's like I have to get my game on when I come. And because of that, not only can I sense that more, Marvette, but I can find my way to it. Does that make sense? Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that there was a process of finding your way to it that you have developed over time?
Absolutely. It's real simple. And it was the first hint of it was given to me by Lee Lozowick about 32 years ago when I was sitting in his Cafe of Doom or whatever the hell they call that thing.
Tavern of Ruin.
Tavern of Ruin.
Cafe of Doom is good enough.
Middle of the night, you go over there to have a salad and talk. And when I said to him, I said, you know, EJ wants me to go out and live with him in that community to be their accountant. And I says, but I'm already an accountant.
Uh-huh.
And Lee looks at me and goes, ah, yes, but then you'll be an accountant there.
Exactly. Yeah,
and he says, all you may not know what to do, your job is just to persist. I guarantee you, every Wednesday night, every 2 or 3 days as I'm getting ready for this class, it's not that I dread it. It's just that it's like I don't want to bother with it. Like I'm busy. I could be watching a movie right now.
Oh yeah, really.
I got a movie there queued up to go, but I know how to persist because I'm like the ox in the Chinese astrology. I'm the ox that just, at least I know how to plod ahead one foot after the other in the mud. And I just plod. That at least I know how to do. I can stay in the game. And sometimes that's what we can offer each other, is just the willingness to be here. Look at Dan over here. He sits there. I mean, you know, I don't know, when did you start sitting in that position, Dan? 3 years ago? So he comes.
It's a lifetime, and he can't.
It was at least 3 years ago.
At least 3 or 4 years ago.
4 or 5.
So all he does, he doesn't do anything. He walks in the door. He walks over to the computer, turns it on, and logs in, and then reads the data if there's somebody has a comment. And let me continue. And he has gotten more and more excellent at it over the years. And I probably could describe what that means, that he's better at it. His excellence now has a lot to do with that he's present there. And there's a simplicity of being. But sometimes all we can do, the only skill set we have to offer, Ivan, is we can persist.
You're also talking about taking a post. It's a post.
And this, before anybody came in here today, I was sitting here, I was looking around, I looked at Dan's chair, and I thought, it has become a post. Become a post. And when we're talking about the interactivity of the voyagers in a Bardo space, there are certain people that you count on to take various posts that you can rely on to respond in the appropriate manner in those spaces. Somebody holds these posts. As the group becomes more formalized and the group becomes more sophisticated, we start to assume the post that our future self is wanting us to fulfill. Okay? I got them apples.
I have two comments. First of all, I just can't imagine the space without Dan sitting there. It's part of the vibration, part of the pillar vibration of the space. So I think it was very appropriate to identify it as a post. I think what you said about Bardo spaces and that as they become more apparent, and you use the word formalized, I'm using the word apparent. People assume posts, and E.J. has talked about, you know, that many times, that actually we provide, what did he call it? We provide a Bardo space for travelers. Travelers come through here regularly.
Yes.
And these type of broadcasts are that too. They're a congregation of travelers in the Bardo, and as a group, it seems like we are creating that post
as a
station.
We're,
you know,
holding a post.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And which implies,
thank you,
that we're able to hold the post.
Okay.
So we're like a tavern on the road in the middle of the forest, and every once in a while it happens to be, hello, this is Wednesday night, it's 7 o'clock. So that's the form that the tavern takes.
Yeah.
And the weary travelers come and get meals, and they get beds and rest.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting, David. I think your formulations are strong tonight. I wanted to go back to this text again of Vijay's, which again is from years ago. You know, it's from a group at a different time, a different moment, let's say, or different
definitely
process, a different part of the history of the Institute or what EJ was doing with groups. But I mean, this, what you're saying here, this idea of the amnesia seems very relevant. G is commenting to M, even though this data was already present in you, maybe never formulate for yourself until provoked.
Yeah.
In other words, in the group context. Ideas must be used continually if they are to survive. We have only so much room for active ideas. Those not in use fall under law of amnesia. And, you know, I wanted to say that, again, for a lot of us, I guess we're baby boomers. You know, in other contexts, we say, oh, we're the baby boomers, and now we're looking at all these younger people like millennials and Gen X and some other unnamed generations and so on and so forth. But, I mean, a lot of us came in through study circles. You know, I came in contact with this institute through a study circle leader in Tucson, Arizona. But the thing that you were talking about, like the, what would you call it, the tavern, you know, the tavern along the road, it's also like the weapon shops of Isher, you know, like what EJ called the weapon shop of Isher. If you know this science fiction novel, it suddenly appears somewhere where it's needed.
Where it's needed.
And it supplies to people what they need. And then once that need is handled, it disappears and it reappears somewhere else. But I wanted to say that this is, in our enterprise here of talking about functions and operations of groups, I mean, this is, I have thought from time to time, you know, over a few years now with this process here, that this is not like the study circles that I participated in the 70s and 80s. And on the other hand, I think that this is a experiment in form, an experiment in format, an experiment in shape, what he call maybe macro-dimensional shape of a study circle, of the function, which is a similar function, which goes along with this talk from the 80s, you know, basically from decades ago, says right here, ideas must be used continually if they are to survive. Because what it's exactly what I experienced in Tucson, because I was a much younger person. But when the study circle that I was in blew up, basically broke up, and it didn't work out because of shortcomings, you know, personal conflicts and difficulties among ourselves, you know, I came back, and actually then I found myself isolated, alone, and without a study circle. And so my reaction was, gee, I'm going to finish. I was finishing my degree. I went back to finish my degree at the University of Arizona. But it's like, I don't want to be here without a study circle. So then I started putting out ads. In other words, I duplicated what the man who had magnetized me to come to his study circle had done some years before. I put out ads, and I started looking for people, you know, to revive the study circle. And, you know, it was sort of a visceral drive that I had. But on the other hand, I also had become aware, you know, this first study circle had actually been valuable, let's say it had been active enough or valuable enough to me that I had come to realize that this teaching that we're working with comes alive in the transmission.
It comes alive.
It comes alive when it's offered and shared.
Well, this is what we were talking about last week,
so,
the idea of transmission of the active ideas. Now, Marvette, you had asked me, was there a technique I used? Was there a process developed, right? Something like that. And I answered in a certain way, but then I just realized something different. When I decide to come, I don't use a process where I drop the elements of sleep. of mechanicality. I do not. Rather, I rise to the higher space of presence. So it's not like I'm trying to get rid of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I allow myself and I make the effort to rise to the excellence of presence that is put out by the individuals that are here. That's the difference.
That sounds like the law of necessity.
It's partly the law of necessity, but it's also the law of, there's got to be a word for it, but it's the law of harmonics or resonance.
Resonance,
the law of resonance. I wish to be in that higher space. Part of it is theoretical, because I come in, I sit down, and I know there may be nobody else here. Nobody else may come. Pat couldn't make it tonight. Ivan, I'm glad Ivan made it. I'm glad Dan made it. Love it. But there may be nobody, and in a certain way, I still hold the space.
Yeah, this is interesting. I want you to know, David, that I may have told this story before, but there were nights in Tucson, I rented a space.
Yeah.
And there were nights when I went and, you know, it was an hour, like the group, you know, the meeting time was like 7 to 8:30 or something like that. I went and I turned on the lights and I queued up a tape, or sometimes I had put music on a tape player or something like that, and I sat there and
You were the
held
only
the
guy.
Meeting. Yeah, I sat as if in a meeting.
So our job,
even when nobody showed up.
So, but etherically, from a Bardo space, from that point of view, you did the work you were meant to do that night.
Interesting thing was that, you know, this part of it about the, we have only so much room for active ideas. The active, that's a really interesting phrase, the active ideas, because what I experienced is that when I put out the effort to make that space and have it available at the same time every week, and I had ads out for it, so then inevitably what happened was one week absolute strangers walked in. I mean, people that I had never seen before and who had just responded to the ad. You know, and this would happen periodically. And then sometimes I would have a run of meetings where people came to pursue something, and we would actually activate. The ideas would be active for a period of weeks.
But one idea of hold the space was active, I think.
It was active, yeah. I actually got a very strong, what would you call that, electrical. I had a very strong physical sensation of that, that at times, even when I just sat there myself for an hour, it felt what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I felt the atmosphere. I felt that it was a...
You were able to open the portal.
It was good
for it to occur.
It was beneficial to me, because it was, I was still bringing my elevated game. I was elevating my game whether somebody else came or not.
I want to read through chapters, page 74.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to skip over a couple of things, but page 74 then. Man is not at some past state awake and then fell to earth and went to sleep. He did not arrive on holiday just to occupy a body for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He has his rising in the body and may perhaps use his accidental organic formation to accumulate substance for the formation of a soul, but he cannot be helped who closes the door. For one who is convinced he already has a soul, nothing further along the lines is possible. Chess is a simple game, which can be learned in just a few minutes, which takes many years to master. Anyone can see this in relation to chess, yet not in relation to work on oneself. Even the greatest master of chess can win only when his opponent makes a mistake. To be a real man is far more subtle game. Now, to win this game, we must play in such a way as to force nature to make a mistake and to allow evolution beyond the ordinary organic. Once we win, however, nature, like any other bully, becomes our friend. A man who has acquired 4 fully developed bodies possesses many properties which ordinary man does not possess, cannot, without effort, a very special kind, possess. One of these unique properties is immortality. All religions and teachings contain this idea of attaining immortality, but very few contain exact instructions how.
That's excellent. What a formulation.
How do you like that one?
Tremendous, yeah. This is a whole teaching right here. Oh, I love the chess
analogy.
Chess analogy is terrific.
Yeah. So we can learn how to play the game called evolution of the self. And there's hundreds of technologies, hundreds of books, hundreds of workshops. There's hundreds of workshops, Simon.
Yeah.
I mean, thousands, I guess, all the time, every weekend, on how to transform yourself. So it's easy to get in the game, but to master the game, there's only one door, and that's the door of persistence. The door of persistence, and on and on and on we must go. Then we begin to notice things that were never there before, that we were never able to see before, but they were there.
Well, he's saying it's a far more subtle game.
It's a far more subtle
game. And he's talked about, and then this is a fascinating talk. The part that you skipped over was the part about how we don't see
the third force.
The third force, we see only the two, what is it called, the active and the passive, you know, the two opposing forces. And
we might go back to that next week.
The unification, the reconciliation. Yeah, I think we should spend another week on this talk. It's so packed.
It's
vibrant. It's really packed.
But it's
also,
so when we talk about this idea of immortality,
yeah,
what we don't remember, we don't wish to face, that form of immortality is impersonal. It's an impersonal immortality that you do not acquire because it's you and your groovy self. It's a job that you're doing on behalf of the Absolute to formulate a concrete moments of immortality that can then be carrier pigeons to maybe another life, another group, another whatever.
Well, I'd just like to say also that the instructions for getting there, going back to what Harry has shared with us, I mean, this also is not necessarily going to be like some heavenly angelic process. There may be a certain amount of pain and difficulty involved, as well as the subtlety that he's talking about here. But, I wanted to point out something else, which I think maybe I should impersonate Patricia Elizabeth by saying, you look at the end of this talk and then you go back and look at the beginning. To live in past and future is to live among the organic dead. I think this, the idea that he arrives at immortality at the end of this talk, I got a feeling, first of all, that this was a much longer talk, that this is a edited version. It's like, certain strong statements or
two
strong
and a half
passages.
Pages long, yeah.
Yeah, strong passages out of, well, this might have been something like a 4 or 5 hour talk that was distilled into what we're reading here. But, this idea about the having a formula and actually having a process or a knowledge or a technique that will, where you arrive at immortality, is also a way of escaping the past and future. Because I believe when E.J. talks about that higher dimensional view, where you're seeing, if you get outside of time, what you see is that there aren't actually choice points. That there isn't actually
you're not there for.
There's not actually an entity that's going through changes in time. It's actually the fixed, like a tube. That's actually like a series of images or a route that you travel through all of these moments in your life. And so that would be something like the view of immortality or from immortality. Anyway.
We have to remember that this immortality is not personal. It's not like you you get to live a lot longer, and the reason you want to live longer is so you can work out all your stuff. And this is, it has nothing to do with all your stuff. I read an article about a guy that does a ayahuasca priest down in South America.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he's been getting a lot more people coming through there. And he goes, but what am I supposed to do with these wealthy businessmen that want to do this voyaging so they could run their business better and make more money?
Mm. Yeah, really. They should, yeah, maybe.
So the objective of these principles that we're talking about can be used in life, but that's not their purpose. Their purpose is to develop an immortality that is something that fulfills a small bit of purpose that each of us have in our lives. Okay? We'll understand more what that immortality is, and you can sense it. I remember sensing it when I was very, very young. I began to sense this immortality, and I knew it was not of me.
Yeah, well, you need to be sure to highlight that, you know, what he's talking about, what he's being very clear about in this talk here, you know, which is that there's nothing automatic about this process. There is, you know, there is not a soul just because you were born here and just because you've had a hard life or a good life or a better life or this life or that life.
Well, I think the easiest one is he says, learn how to play chess in a few minutes.
Yeah, well, it's a process, you know, that you have to work. There's a big job to be done it requires a lot of effort to be able to get anywhere near this immortality.
So why does somebody put in effort? They put in effort because it's worth a stretch.
Yeah, well.
It's worth a stretch. And when you begin tasting the nectar of the spaces that we're talking about, you go, yeah, it's worth that stretch. Anyway. Well, there you go, Ivan.
So Pianjo says, it appears that implicit memories hidden by traumas in organic life have the potential, when made explicit, to cease stopping us from living in the present.
Yeah.
Traumas made explicit no longer function as buffers.
Gotta name it.
Traumas made explicit no longer function as buffers.
So this is what this is the holy act of confession. The confession on this level that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Once you confess it in a group, you're done. That piece of yourself, and that's why every once in a while I talk about some of the stuff I get into, you know. And I'm not doing it because I'm supposed to confess like a good Catholic. I'm doing it because I'm putting the machine on notice. I'm saying it in this group.
Mm-hmm.
This is how this works in me. And we all have that opportunity. We know the rules of how to play chess. At some point, we're going to want to practice and become a master. And I think we're just a little over time now, Ivan. And I want to thank everybody for coming again this evening. And we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Harry.
Good night.